Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in this segment, we're going to continue our analysis of a series of terrorist incidents apparently perpetrated by elements of the far-right wing in the United States, explicitly fascist elements. I suspect, as I've indicated, that not only are there fascist elements of the paramilitary right involved, though not necessarily the whole thing or even most of it, I think that also fascist elements within the government, although not necessarily the whole government or even most of it, may very well be involved. I also suspect that these terrorist incidents may be part of a worldwide program of fascist terror, again involving underground paramilitary elements in various countries cooperating with like-minded elements within their respective governments. The paradigm that I think may very well be operating is the strategy of tension. That is a program of right-wing terror that was perpetrated in Italy involving elements of the fascist underground, the fascist political milieu in Italy, acting in conjunction with the notorious P2 Lodge that I've discussed in other programs, and elements of the Italian national security establishment. The strategy of tension was the brainchild of Stefano Della Chiaia, an Italian fascist who was one of the intimates of the P2 and an individual discussed at length in RFA number 19, available from Archives on Audio. In turn, the strategy of tension of Stefano Della Chiaia appears to have been an outgrowth of Operation Gladio. That was a NATO operation to set up guerrilla groups in order to fight the Red Army in the event of a successful Soviet invasion of Western Europe, an invasion never actually contemplated nor possible. That invasion, or that contingency plan, I should say, appears to have gone to, instead of combating a possible Soviet invasion, have gone toward conducting a program of right-wing terror in various European countries, primarily Italy, although not exclusively. The strategy of tension and Operation Gladio is something that I have discussed in numerous archive shows, including some of these half-hour segments. Before the break, we were discussing the report by Germany Alert newsletter of meetings between members of the Michigan militia and Ewald Altans, a German Nazi leader, the protege of Otto Ernst Rehmer, one of Hitler's a member of the Liebstandarte Adolf Hitler, a Waffen-SS unit that grew directly out of Hitler's personal bodyguard. Otto Ernst Rehmer, one of the post-World War II members of the Odessa, the SS underground that thrived and continues to thrive. Otto Ernst Rehmer was also the individual who liquidated the conspirators against Adolf Hitler on July 20th, 1944. Ewald Altans was his protege. Ewald Altans also, according to Spiegel magazine, was an agent of the Verfassungsschutz, the domestic German intelligence service. If, in fact, the report from Germany Alert and the report from Spiegel are accurate, that would indicate and would in many ways highlight the paradigm that I am suggesting may very well be at work not only in the United States but elsewhere, including Germany. Before the break, we were about to take a look at an article from Searchlight Magazine's issue of November of 1995. Searchlight Magazine is a very important anti-fascist publication. I would strongly recommend that listeners access that. And in the November 1995 issue of Searchlight Magazine, there's an article by Andreas Fass, F-A-H-S, a German anti-fascist. It's entitled, Werewolf or Paper Tiger, The State of Germany's Nazi Movement. In this article, there is a description of the tactics and ideology and structure of contemporary German Nazism, something that I have dealt with at great length in numerous archive shows. And I think in the discussion here of the relationship between the German Nazi infrastructure, the German government, and the program of terror that is being has been conducted in Germany and also in neighboring Austria, I think we can view a paradigm that, in my opinion, is also at work here in the United States. And indeed, I suspect that there are direct and ongoing connections between German Nazi elements and their counterparts in the United States. I also suspect that there are direct and ongoing connections between Nazi elements in the German government and Nazi elements in the American government as well, as crazy as that may seem to the uninitiated. By the way, if you are new to these programs, I strongly recommend that you avail yourselves of the archive shows available from a tape duplication service that I will have more to say about later on in the program. In this particular Searchlight article from November of 1995, in the article Werewolf or Paper Tiger by Andreas Voss, we read, first of all, about a plan on the part of the SRA, that is the Social Revolutionary Workers Front, or the Social Revolutionary Arbeiter Front. That is a German Nazi organization, and one that is or has formulated a strategy of infiltrating the German police and military so that the Nazi infiltrators in the German police and military can not only receive the training they need to carry out violent acts, but can also basically compromise those institutions on the part of the Nazis. Skipping down in this article, we read, in Umbruch, U-M-B-R-U-C-H, the SRA's education bulletin for leaders, subleaders, and trusted activists, Stefan Hupke, H-U-P-K-A, a central SRA cadre, sets out clearly the dual strategy of the SRA involving infiltration of the state apparatus. Quote, known activists must get on with their normal political work, which is as necessary as ever. The others, however, should keep their distance from known rightist groups. They should not even identify themselves as nationalists. They should join the army and the police and see to it that they acquire specialized knowledge and abilities, unquote. The acquisition of this, quote, specialized knowledge and abilities, unquote, denotes the preparation of a new level of terror aimed not principally at foreigners and asylum seekers' hostels, but at, quote, politicians, journalists, intellectuals in various organizations who prove themselves stubbornly anti-national and pro-multicultural, unquote. What is set out here is essentially the, quote, strategy of tension, unquote, that has already begun in Austria with a series of Nazi letter bombings. Rieger pointed in this direction as early as 1992, when, in an interview with ARD television, he proclaimed, quote, when the first reporter is knocked over, when the first judge is rubbed out, then you will know it started, unquote. The political foundation for the NF-organized werewolf organization is precisely this, quote, strategy of tension, unquote, according to which the bourgeois democratic state will be made to look weak and ineffective in the face of terror, coupled with the development of political and economic crises. It is a fact that this kind of strategy does lead toward the establishment of a, quote, strong state, unquote, whose attacks on democratic rights and increasingly repressive policies can be attributed to the need to react to such terror. By the way, interrupting, the strategy of tension, which manifested itself in Italy as operation as an apparent outgrowth of Operation Gladio, something discussed, by the way, in some of the earlier half-hour segments in this ongoing series. The strategy of tension has as its most glaring example the Reichstag fire scenario. The Reichstag fire was an incident of Nazi terror in which the Nazis under Hitler burned the German parliament building, the Reichstag, blamed it on the communists, and then used that as an excuse to declare emergency measures which gave Hitler dictatorial powers. The use of provocation, the use of state-sponsored terror to undermine democracy by necessitating, quote-unquote, emergency measures to be taken to combat the terrorism is the paradigm that Adolf Hitler used. It is the paradigm being discussed in this particular article, and I suspect it may very well be an element in what we are seeing in the United States. I think that, as I've indicated earlier, the political rhetoric of the right wing and the paramilitary elements, including the Patriots networks, as well as the political rhetoric of the government, the mainstream press, and the progressive sector of this country, are completely inadequate. Both have tended to view either the government and or the paramilitary right, patriots, militias, etc., as monoliths. Neither is, and I suspect that collaboration between fascist elements of the paramilitary right and fascist elements in the government working together to not only eliminate democratic and civil liberties in this country, but to eventually establish fascism, a fascism which would benefit those elements within the government and within the paramilitary right that are of fascist and Nazi sympathies. That is what I believe is currently underway. It is my opinion that the United States is currently being, that American democracy, I should say, is currently being destabilized by fascist elements within the government and within the paramilitary right. And I suspect, I cannot prove, but I suspect that this may be a pattern that is underway elsewhere around the world, and that the destabilization programs currently being conducted by elements of the German Nazi movement, as well as the Austrian Nazi movement, and elements in Japan grouped around the Aum Shinrikyo cult of Shoko Asahara, quite possibly elements in France affiliated with the Islamic movement in Algeria. More about that later. I suspect that all of these may very well be connected with what is going on in the United States. And I suspect that a worldwide fascist underground with elements in the right-wing milieus of these countries, as well as in the governments themselves, may very well be complicit. Returning again to this particular article, it is a fact that this kind of strategy does lead towards the establishment of a, quote, strong state, unquote, whose attacks on democratic rights and increasingly repressive policies can be attributed to the need to react to such terror. The German Nazi terror onslaught of 1991 to 93, for example, enabled Helmut Kohl to toy publicly with the idea of introducing a state of emergency, which would have led to the curtailment of democratic rights. Similarly, the Austrian Nazi letterbomb campaigns have served above all to strengthen the electoral fascist Jörg Haider and his freedom movement, and have made their demands for the beefing up of the state apparatus and for increased spying on the population by the state a matter of public consensus. And indeed, I think the terrorist incidents afflicting the United States may very well be functioning in a similar fashion with regard to their subversive effect for American democracy as well. We will be discussing Jörg Haider in other segments in this ongoing series. Continuing with this, let's leave aside this particular article at this time. I want to note, for the purposes of the present discussion, some similarities between the terrorist incidents that have been afflicting public conveyances in this country, the Amtrak derailment, the terrorist attack against the bombing of a wind shear detection device at LaGuardia Airport, and terrorist incidents that have been taking place in other countries as well, in particular terrorist incidents directed at rail traffic. A country that has been experiencing a wave of terrorism is France, and in particular the terrorism that has been afflicting France has been directed to a considerable extent at trains, not only regular passenger trains, but the metro, the underground trains as well. One of these attacks was described in the San Francisco Examiner of Tuesday, October 17th of 1995. This is an Associated Press story by Christopher Burns, headlined Bomb Injures 28 on Paris Subway Train. It's subtitled Device Atypical of Algerian, of Algerian Militants. It's Dateline Paris and reads as follows. It reads in part as follows. A bomb exploded under a seat on a commuter train during morning rush hour Tuesday, severing the feet of some victims and injuring at least 28 people. It was the eighth bombing or attempted bombing in France since July, and witnesses said the subway tunnel near the Louvre Museum was filled with smoke and cries for help. I would note in this regard a couple of things. First of all, as we have looked at in past broadcasts, there are ongoing connections between the German intelligence service, the BND, and the Algerian Islamic militants that are attempting to overthrow the government of Algeria, a former French colony. I would also note in this particular regard that there are connections between Islamic extremist elements in Europe, including France, and elements of the fascist third position that we have discussed in past programs, including a miscellaneous archive show available from archives on audio. And in turn, there are links between the fascist third position and the French fascists, such as the elements of Jean-Marie Le Pen's Front National, which, interestingly enough, operates in a considerable measure on an anti-immigrant and anti-Muslim-slash-Arab platform. We have looked at connections in the past between the German BND, the German Intelligence Service, and the successor organization to the Reinhard Galen spy outfit, and the Algerian Muslim militants attempting to overthrow the Algerian government. We have also looked at, in the past, in our series on Reunited Germany, the New Danger, at the French targeting of their short-range Hades nuclear missiles on Germany. One of the questions I have concerning the bombs in France is whether perhaps the apparent program of Islamic terror taking place in France might actually be occurring with the complicity of elements of the German intelligence service, in turn acting in conjunction with residual fascist elements in the German government and the German political underground. Again, that is not a statement one can make, but rather a question that I think needs to be asked, and something that, as far-reached, far-fetched as that might appear to be, at first glance, that's something that I think should not be readily dismissed. Whatever the authorship of the terror program that has been, the terror campaign that has been taking place in France, I would note that the attacks on trains, the attacks on public conveyances, is something which has an extremely destabilizing effect on the government. It makes the government look weak and ineffectual. I would note that we are seeing similar attacks on public transportation in the United States and in Japan as well. Again, we will be talking more about the American and Japanese situations. I would also note that the response on the part of the governments, the anti-democratic measures taken to combat terrorism, also basically has a destabilizing effect on democracy. And if, in fact, those anti-democratic measures are carried to the extreme that they were in Germany, that could lead to the elimination of democracy. Also, the inability on the part of government to deal with these terrorist incidents makes the government look ineffective and discredits it. Also, it tends to, the repression tends to polarize those elements that are on the receiving end of that repression. A listener researched the following article from the Christian Science Monitor of October 6th of 1995. This is an article by Sarah Chayes, C-H-A-Y-E-S. It's headlined, France's Costly Anti-Terror War. It reads in part as follows, skipping down. In contrast to certain American examples of police use of force, in Waco, Texas, for example, the gendarmes were doubtless within the law in killing Kelkal. This, by the way, is Khaled Kelkal, a young Frenchman of Algerian extraction who was apparently involved in some of the terrorist incidents, including an attempt to bomb the Paris to Lyon high-speed rail line. Beginning again. In contrast to certain American examples of police use of force in Waco, Texas, for instance, the gendarmes were doubtless within the law in killing Kelkal. Not only was he implicated in at least two of the terrorist attacks that have traumatized the country since July, he was also shooting at the police. Skipping down. By early September, the maximum security plan, this is the counter-terror crackdown that the French authorities have engaged in, by early September, the maximum security plan named Vigipirate, or Vigipirate, V-I-G-I-P-I-R-A-T-E, with its 2,300 soldiers and 90,000 military police officers, had changed the face of French towns. In Paris alone, several hundred thousand random or not-so-random identity checks have been conducted in the past 2 months. For example, at the Châtelet subway station, the hub of the commuter rail system, two freshly mobilized gendarmes approach a group of friends who've met at the station to trade football cards. The officers pull aside the only North African-looking man in the group. Instead of handing his papers to him after verification, they drop them on the ground. Quote, rather, there's no quote here. This is not police brutality or excessive use of force. But it sparked the indignation of seven people who were not predisposed against the security measures. The action converted potential allies of law enforcement measures into opponents who, on some level, began to sympathize with Kelkal. This is invariably what happens when a wartime mentality is applied to groups within society, be they Muslims in France, or African Americans, or even Branch Davidians in the United States. I think this particular analysis goes to the very core of one of the central elements in the strategy of tension, which I suspect may be being applied in Europe, in France, Germany, and the United States, or France, Germany, and Austria, as well as in the United States and in Japan. In addition to eliminating democratic measures in the name of combating terrorism, the crackdowns, the counter-terrorist measures, also have the effect of polarizing society and alienating people from the government and from democratic process who normally would not be anti-government. And indeed, that polarization and stratification further serves to undermine the democratic institutions of that country. That is also one of the central elements in the strategy of tension. I would note that attacks on trains, attacks on public conveyances, including attacks by elements that may very well have connections to the government as well as to international fascism, this is not something that is limited to Europe and to the United States. Research credit on the following also goes to that very same listener who also researched this from the Christian Science Monitor. This is an article by Cameron W. Barr, B-A-R-R, of the Christian Science Monitor. It's headlined, Japan Touches Taboo in Pursuing Asahara, and subheaded Anti-Subversives Law. By the way, the Aum Shinrikyo cult of Shoko Asahara, something that I will be discussing in weeks and months to come, has many indications, to my way of thinking, of the involvement of intelligence agencies and may very well involve some elements of the Japanese national security establishment as well. Indeed, Aum Shinrikyo successfully recruited active duty and former members of the military in order to put together a paramilitary component. Its capabilities suggest something much larger than merely a religious cult, and in fact it may be very similar to the Japanese patriotic or ultranationalist societies that destabilized Japanese democracy in the pre-World War II period and that paved the way for the rise of Japanese fascism. These organizations could be thought of as a combination of intelligence fronts working for the Imperial Japanese staff, as well as organized crime syndicates and religious cults. They had features of all of those things. There's discussion of that in a miscellaneous archive show entitled Japanese Fascism, Its History and Significance for Contemporary Americans. I would note that Shoko Asahara drew upon Adolf Hitler as one of his sources of spiritual inspiration. Adolf Hitler was one of the figures revered by Shoko Asahara. The effects of the poison gas attacks, including sarin, a poison gas, a nerve gas developed by the IG Farben Chemical Company for the Nazis in the pre-World War II period, the effect of these gas attacks on Japanese democracy has been to undermine it and to spur the authorities to take security measures which threaten the stability of civil liberties in Japan. That is the basic focus of this particular article from the Christian Science Monitor of October 6th of 1995. The article reads in part, many Japanese liberals and leftists maintain a vigil over their government, watching for indications the officials are reviving the stifling authoritarianism of pre-war Japan. They apparently have an unlikely ally in the leader of the religious group Aum Shinrikyo, which has been accused of a series of crimes, including the murderous use of nerve gas against Tokyo subway riders in March. Group founder Shoko Asahara, who has been denying the group's culpability since his arrest in May, has reportedly begun reversing himself out of concern that the government will invoke a draconian security law against Aum Shinrikyo. Press reports late this week say that Mr. Asahara has begun acknowledging the group's responsibility for a number of crimes and may be admitting to his own role. Asahara appears to be trying to preserve his group, but many Japanese have criticized the government for even thinking of using the 1952 statute, which has thus far only been invoked in cases of individual radicals. Religious leaders, rights activists, lawyers, and politicians have said the law's application in this case would be inappropriate and could ultimately lead to its use as a political weapon. So again, I would note the pro-Hitler sympathies of Shoko Asahara, the destabilizing effect that the terrorist incidents allegedly perpetrated by his cult have had on Japanese democracy. I would also note the indications of overlap between the Aum Shinrikyo cult and the Japanese National Security Establishment. And I would note that just as fascist elements in the United States, very, very powerful elements, including much of the corporate elite of the United States, saw to it that the fascists in Italy were basically not purged, the same fascist elements in the United States saw to it that the denazification program in Germany was a failure. Just as those fascist elements in the United States frustrated the elimination of fascism in Italy and in Germany because the doctrinaire anti-labor and anti-communist stance of fascism made it very appealing to them and apparently, according to those elements, useful during the coming confrontation with the Soviet Union, those same elements also saw to it that the attempt to remove fascism in Japan was unsuccessful as well. And indeed, the Japanese fascists remained in power in Japan to a large extent behind a democratic facade. The Japanese fascists found the Liberal Democratic Party in Japan to be only too hospitable to their continued political existence. And I would note the destabilizing effect of the attacks on trains in Japan upon Japanese democracy. And I would note the similarity between what is going on in Japan to what has been going on in France. Of course, in France, the terrorist incidents have been perpetrated allegedly by Islamic militants, although I would note that there are connections between Islamic militants and the fascist third position, as well as between the Algerian Islamic militants and German intelligence. I would note the similarity to the program of Nazi terror in Germany, which has been calling for measures to undermine civil liberties in order to combat it. And also note that the program of letter bombs in Austria has been strengthening the hand of Jörg Haider as well. Note also the Nazi strategy as formalized by Stefan Hübke of the SRA of infiltrating the police and military. I would note that the alleged perpetrators of the Oklahoma City bombing were members of the same military unit. I would also note that as of 1995, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the United States is General John Shalakashvili, himself the son of a Georgian Waffen-SS officer, an officer in a Georgian Waffen-SS unit that fought against the United States in World War II. It specifically opposed the U.S. landings at Omaha Beach on D-Day. I would note that his father's writings at the Hoover Institute, right down the road at Stanford University, laud the Waffen-SS in no uncertain terms. Shalakashvili himself was of the age of consciousness when he came to the United States. There's no indication, formal indication, that he has Nazi sympathies. On the other hand, his father certainly did. And it'd be interesting to know to what extent John Shalakashvili may have taken some of his political cues from his father. Again, this entire line of discussion began with our examination of the derailing of an Amtrak train in Arizona. That derailing accomplished by the sons of the Gestapo, according at least to the note left by that train. I suspect that that incident, as well as the Oklahoma City bombing and other terrorist incidents in the United States, may very well be a program of fascist subversion, which is intended to undermine American democracy, and I suspect that it involves elements of the paramilitary right as well as elements of the government, and that in turn similar elements in other countries are involved in a similar cooperative pattern in order to undermine democracy and to establish worldwide fascist domination. That concludes this segment. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.